Welcome to the Not All Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. Certainly, one of the things that I love about hosting this show is the sharing that I get to do with all of you. Today's show falls in that category, something really great I found that I get to share with you, and with a twist. My hope is that you'll then share this with others, and I say that, request it, actually, because of the help this can offer. Our guest today is John Moe. John is host of the podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression. Before you judge a book by its cover, wait until you hear more than just the title of the show. And remember, this is entertaining, but it's important stuff, so hang in. John's show is a show about clinical depression, but with laughs. The Hilarious World of Depression is a podcast series, really, of frank, moving, and yes, funny conversations with top comedians who've dealt with this disease, hosted by our guest today, veteran humorist, comedy writer, former actor, and self-described comedy nerd, public radio host, John Moe. John's approach is to begin a conversation about depression, around helping us as audience, family members, teachers, clergy, those of us who even suffer from the disease depression, to learn how others have dealt with depression and managed to laugh along the way. I say laugh, emphasize the title of Hilarious World of Depression, spotlight on John's comedy writing, because John's show looks at links between depression and comedy through conversations with nationally recognized comedians who share their struggles with mental illness and depression. And we'll talk a little bit today about who some of those guests are. We'll also introduce John in just a second, but one final mention. It also bears noting that the show has a well-respected healthcare partner. John likes to say The Hilarious World of Depression is not medical treatment, should not be seen as medical treatment or a substitute for therapy or medication, but the MakeItOkay.org campaign and the sponsor, Health Partners, are just that. Now, quote-unquote show and sponsor remain fully autonomous, and quote-unquote show and sponsor are very separate, but you'll hear during the interview mention of a depression pledge available at MakeItOkay.org. If you get a chance, sign the pledge. This is a personal show for me, and I requested right up front that you consider sharing this with others. I hope you do. But importantly, I also hope it's a chance to gain some insight, be entertained, have a few laughs, and realize that people with depression aren't alone, and that together we can all feel a bit better. Enjoy today's show. John Moe, welcome to the show. You know, I want to say right out of the gate, the interesting thing about the name of your new podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression, is that for people who suffer from depression, we all know that humor helps, which may seem truly contradictory, but the problem, of course, is being able to, you know, kind of find the humor, and you're doing that for us. You're providing the humor. What is it about humor that helps with clinical depression, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily like a doctor prescribed thing, but I think, I mean, I've always found depression to be hilarious, and I've dealt with it for a very long time. But I mean, it's this chemical imbalance in your brain that makes you not feel things or be numb to experiences or be, you know, unable to get out of bed. And it's you who's doing it. I mean, it's not like you're being set up by some, you know, outside force or burglar or conspiratorial organization. It's you battling against you. I think that's really funny. And I mean, I think too, that there's this misconception that people with depression are, as one of our guests on the show said, middle-aged women looking out the window sadly into a rainstorm as it's portrayed in the pharmaceutical ads.
Right.
But, you know, I laugh. I have a good time. I've, you know, been vigilant about treating my depression. I can feel how other people get to feel without meds and therapy. It's just a thing you have to adjust. So it's, you know, part of what I want to portray on the show is people live full lives. They're mm-hmm. happy. They're sad. They have successful careers. They have families. They have, you know, they go bowling. They do everything. It's just they have this thing that needs to be addressed along the way. Not unlike diabetes, and humor is one of those things that is very much a part of lots of depressed people's lives. And I just wanted to make people aware of that.
Well, you've done a great job. I love it. And
thanks.
Yeah, of course. I really get the sense from comments that I've read online and tweets from some of your guests that it's hitting home. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background. And I'm curious too. It seems almost like there was a strategy around the release of the podcast itself, kind of the timing, maybe a seasonal, you know, kind of specific strategy. But tell us a little bit about you and you know, kind of some of the strategy behind the show too.
Okay, that's a lot of questions piled up.
Sorry, I can go back and parse them out for you.
Yeah, no, I can take a whack at it. I mean, in terms of the launch of the show, it does time out with the slide into real and metaphoric darkness that mm-hmm. the winter holiday period would denote. But it was accidental. We had a bunch of podcasts coming out from American Public Media all through the fall with In the Dark and Historically Black and Terrible Thanks for Asking. And so we mm-hmm. were just that's when the jet could get on the runway, basically. And so, you know, we've been doing interviews for the show since August, and just sort of banking them as we go along. Mm-hmm. But it did give us some time to really spend with it and make sure that we were getting it right. You know, my background is somebody who has had, like I say in the first episode, depression and comedy have been huge parts of my life for a very, very long time. And I was I fed on comedy as a young person, you know, making jokes and just sucking up all the Monty Python and mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live and Letterman and anything I could get my hands on. Like I could not get enough comedy. And I've done quite a bit of humor writing, some performance and a lot of writing in my career. And then with depression, over the years, I kept thinking, like, well, what can I do to help people? Especially since 2007, that's when I lost my brother to suicide. He was depressed, and it just wasn't going well in terms of the treatment he was getting. I don't know all the details because he lived in San Diego, I lived in Seattle. You know, after he died, I thought, well, okay, what do I got? I can string words together. I can sometimes get on a microphone. I got on Twitter, and I have a pretty good number of followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, let's just talk about it openly as much as I can and urge people to get help and try to make people realize it is like a broken leg. And it's the analogy that we keep coming back to. It's like, if you broke your leg, nobody would say, well, it's such a nice day. What do you have to have a broken leg mm-hmm. about? You know, how can you have a broken leg when so many people love you? Well, it's nice that they love me, but my leg is broken. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a doctor and you address it and you get treatment. And it's just always been really logical that mental health should be the same way. That being said, it took me a few years of rallying, for, for that destigmatization before I even came out and you know, told the world, yeah, this is something that I go through as well. Because I didn't want to be seen as a sad sack or somebody that you wouldn't want to hire or that you wouldn't want to trust, you know. But there's been absolutely none of that. Ever since I started talking about it, the response I've been getting has been enormous. Like on my Twitter feed, it's 98% stupid jokes. And then maybe like half of a percent is stuff about depression, mental illness, and suicide. And the waves, the torrents of response that come back from those tweets made me think, well, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe there's, you know, maybe people are responding to what I'm saying about this. And I wasn't trying to reach a mass audience, or it wasn't like a shrewd career strategy. I was just looking at like, well, I'm talking bluntly about it. I'm making the occasional joke about it. And people really react to that. So, that's when I started thinking, about doing this. Originally, I thought about it as a book. I was going to go around to the comedians I knew and maybe bring a photographer and do discussions about it then and turn it into like a book with photos. But that didn't really take off. But then I started talking to people within my company about a podcast for it, and it just caught fire immediately. And so, I mean, to that extent, I'm not surprised that it's doing as well as it is, but I'm still surprised that it's doing as well as it is, because I really thought that, oh, okay, for people who are depressed or have a loved one who are depressed, maybe they'll like this. But it's just I think there is a real hunger for more discussion. There are other podcasts out there about mental illness, but I think to have one specifically about depression and featuring people you know to be delightful probably helps.
Yeah. And so the question certainly is, will you focus on comedians? I mean, that's certainly been the case up to now. And I found that in some of the material that's, you know, been written about it. But are other guests going to, you know, offer other perspectives?
Everybody in this first season is makes their living doing comedy. So we have stand-ups. We have Dick Cavett, who was a stand-up, but is a talk show host, longtime talk show host. We have comedy writers. And, you know, any more, like you get somebody like Baron Vaughn, who's on our eighth episode, or Paul F. Tompkins, who's on our ninth episode. These guys are, they're writers, they're actors, they're stand-ups, they're producers. Like, you know, everybody's kind of a polymath when it comes to comedy. But yeah, this season is exclusively people who make their living in comedy talking about their personal experiences with depression.
It's a wonderful program. I'm just going to encourage anyone and everyone to start this conversation. I think this time of year is appropriate, but certainly the subject tends to be one that is maybe perceived as being a little taboo. And I think it's fascinating that you've gotten these people. I mean, if the plan is just to repeat Maria Bamford each week, I think it'll be a hit. I mean, she's wonderful.
Well, she's wonderful because she's so self-aware of who she is, and she's honest about who she is. And, you know, what I realized early on talking to some of these comics was that these are people who make their living saying things and communicating things in a really concise and clear way that cuts through the fog and the BS and gets right into somebody's heart and into somebody's head. And that's the kind of bluntness, and that's the kind of surgical precision of ideas that this issue needs. It needs to be, I've always said, like, I could find a medical expert who has studied depression for years and years and years, and they could probably tell me everything that's happening with the serotonin and all that. And that'd be great. I'm a geek. I would listen to that. But I thought I could probably reach more people if on the podcast title you have the name Maria Bamford or Andy Richter or Jen Kirkman or some of these other people, because you know it's going to go down a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed Sam Grittner's story probably the most. It was a powerful one. And again, I'll just kind of, I'm not going to give anything away from the program because I thought it was just wonderful. I thought the bit about the suicide and the note and your response, just brilliant. I wonder, though, that program, it almost was this ideally situated program as being kind of third in line because suicide is one of the more difficult subjects really to kind of talk about anywhere. And you start off with Maria you start off with Peter Siegel and then go to Maria and then Sam comes in. Was there kind of a decision about that too? Just being sensitive to kind of the subject that Sam talks about?
Well, a little bit. It's funny. Like when we were putting the season together, a lot of it just sort of made logical sense in the sequence with my producer and I. And I think we wanted to lead with some big names to kind of get the attention and to get that coverage. But, you know, Sam doesn't have an HBO special. He doesn't have a Netflix special. But I knew his story and I really wanted to tell it. And, you know, going and giving him a full episode was a decision we made after we did the interview. We said, we've got to really give this the full treatment that it needs. And I think by the third episode, with a lot of listeners, we've kind of earned their trust that, we know what we're doing. We're professional storytellers. We know how to work with audio. We know how to tell a story and we know this issue. So I think that kind of helped. We kind of try to mix it up in terms of, how old the person is, how famous the person is. Mm-hmm. And so, we're following up Sam with Dick Cavett. Mm-hmm. That's coming out on Monday. And, it's kind of, we're trying to get some variety as we go along.
Well, again, I don't want to give anything away. I will just say that, Sam says, he uses a phrase. I've never heard this phrase used this way, describing how kind of Sam felt in terms of his strategies for dealing with depression. He says, get out of my head. And again, that's all I want to say about it, because I think Sam really handles that so brilliantly. But I wonder, for you, are there some of these stories that really strike you as special and profound? And are you turning that into kind of some of your own advice to others about this subject, and maybe your own kind of version as to what to say? You know, if you've got a list of what not to say on the website, well, what to say?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast, I tried to establish in the first episode kind of why I'm talking about it, what my experiences are as somebody who's dealt with it, but not as a doctor and not as an advice giver. Mm-hmm. My approach to radio, I've been in radio for 15 years, is get fascinated by something and then explain to somebody why you're fascinated by it. And you could do that through your own words or through tape or through a lot of different ways. Sam's statement about being in his head was really interesting to me for a few reasons. I think it's really common to be in your head. And Daniel Levitin, the neuroscientist, talked about this in the first episode, distractors versus ruminators. This idea of if you sit there and think about a problem, sometimes the problem gets worse, when what you need to do is go out and connect to people and connect to the world. And then when you come back, you know, you're bringing more to the problem than you otherwise would. I think it's common for performers. I used to be an actor for many years. And one of the reasons I stopped, among the many reasons there are to stop acting, is that I couldn't get out of my head. And those were the exact words I always used. Mm-hmm. Like when I was on stage, I wasn't in the moment. I was thinking about what I wanted to do with the performance. I was thinking about, you know, like I was standing outside myself, kind of working myself like a puppet instead of inhabiting myself. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that from other comics I talk to, like, you know, when you're on stage, does this all go away? Does it all melt away? Cause that's your safe place, which it is for a lot of depressed comedians on stage. It's great because mm-hmm. they can control it. And some of the comics said, no, I'm still in my head. I'm in my head every minute of every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then with depression, your head is not a good part of town to be in. So it can be really rough. So when Sam said that, it made a lot of sense to me. But yeah, generally, like I'm more interested in telling someone else's story than telling my own. There are plenty of things that people have said that are identical to my experiences and my thoughts that I just sort of let them coast by. The only exception I make that I can recall at the moment anyway is the Carol Burnett show. So many people I talked to brought up the Carol Burnett show and that they grew up loving the Carol Burnett show. And like, it doesn't matter the age of the comic, the race of the comic, the gender of the comic, Carol Burnett show, Carol Burnett show, Carol Burnett show. So, you know, and it was the same with me. Like it was the only family appointment viewing that we had was my family would all gather to watch the Carol Burnett show. Everybody quiet. The Carol Burnett show is on. So apparently Ms. Burnett attracts depressed, professional, comedy folks.
She was one of my favorites too. No question. Still is. And certainly for my generation, you know, those over age 59, it's well known, widely reported, makeitokay.org even cites the statistic that 20% of the people over age 59 experience some type of mental illness or depression. And then I wonder, how do we work with, you know, policymakers? I realize, you know, that may not be necessarily part of the show's direction, but it seems like this form of intervention, the humor, you know, being out of your head a bit might be some form of the best intervention. And how do we get more to recognize it as that and not just this kind of this myth and, you know, conquering the blues maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I, like you said, I'm not really about public policy, cause I don't really know how that works. But I am about, I guess it's a grand term, but social change. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to emerge as a societal decision, in the same way that in the 1970s, we said, hey, let's stop throwing garbage all over the place and let's put it in garbage cans. And there was a national reaction against littering. And it worked, you know, let's all decide together that Lake Erie being on fire is a bad thing. Right. And we've managed to get cleaner air and cleaner water. In the 80s, when I was in high school in the 80s, there was a movement where people collectively said, let's not drive drunk anymore because everyone keeps getting killed. Mm-hmm. And that movement was coming around when I was just getting my driver's license. And to me and people of my age, it just seemed like the most logical thing in the world. Like, of course you don't drive drunk. Mm-hmm. Because we had decided as a society not to do that. If there's a hat to throw in names for what our next societal decision is, let's normalize mental illness. Let's make it boring. Let's make it, you know, no different than, oh yeah, that guy, he's got a Lyme disease. Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, no, he's getting it treated. Oh, okay. And not what horrible things is that guy doing wrong? What happened in his past that gave him life? No, shit happens, you know? So it's, and so I think that's where it's got to come from. And it's, and you know, it's a lot of people speaking up who haven't spoken up before. Peter Sagal on our first episode, I was the first person he had talked about who wasn't a medical professional. And he very consciously wanted to come out and talk about it for the first time. And that's why he was our first episode of like, okay, here's somebody breaking the silence. You know, here's somebody who you know to be funny and lively and outgoing. He's got a hit show. He runs marathons. What could be better? Well, you know, this part.
Right. Yeah. And Sam reveals something very, sincere and important to him during your interview, and I thought that was just that was very touching and powerful. I was struck too by the partnership with Health Partners and the MakeItOkay.org our website. I think for all of the reasons that you just cited about, you know, kind of the logic behind talking about this and the conversation that has to happen, it just seems logical to me to have somebody like Health Partners. I don't know the company, but it seems like having that involvement also gives it this level of maybe more certainty. I mean, it's a show about, you know, kind of hilarity and comedy, absolutely. But you also, you are a partner with a website and an organization that can really deliver some very important information. And so I'd love to know a little bit more, you know, how that's going, if you can kind of share some of that.
Sure. Or
if there have been some success stories. Certainly healthcare is a highly regulated industry, so how did they kind of live with you and you kind of with them?
Well, they're a Minnesota-based organization. They're a health insurance company. And my company, American Public Media, you know, is based here in Minnesota as well. So I think they're... both parties had been looking for an opportunity to work together, like Health Partners to give to the community and to promote health. And, you know, our company full of people who are makers. And so, I had a meeting with them, last year, or maybe like January of this past year. And it was really smooth. Like I said, here's what I want to do. Here's a pilot that I had made, kind of a mock-up of an episode. And yeah, that's what we want to make. And they said, great, you know, this fits in with our Make It Okay campaign. This, and you know, we all agreed like, oh, this is, you know, this is a 2-foot putt. And they weren't involved in the editorial at all. You know, we were completely independent. But their support helped us do things like, you know, I could have done the show with a bunch of phone calls and as my own producer. But it allowed me to hire a producer for the show and to do things like go to Sam Grittner's apartment in New York and, you know, visit with him there. And, and some, you know, I went to Chicago, New York, and LA and recorded a lot of these interviews that I think, you know, when you sit across from the person in a place that they're comfortable in, then you can get a lot out of a person in the interview.
Well, it's a wonderful show. And, John Moe, host of the program and podcast, The Hilarious World of Depression. It's brilliant. And I'm grateful for your time. Really, I have to say from, you know, kind of my audience perspective, and I've talked about this subject of depression previously. I think what you're doing, John, is just so timely and so important and necessary. I just really encourage all of my listeners to go to the makeitokay.org site, take that pledge, begin these conversations, and pay attention to kind of some of these shows that you're doing coming up. Dick Cavett, I think, is going to be a wonderful one, but everything in the future is great, too.
Well, thank you so much.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, and good luck to everybody.
Yeah, thank you, John. I appreciate your time.